tell me a little bit about, you know, where the horses fit in your life. And, you know, you haven't said anything about your farming and, but, and keeping your horses from the farming days and, you know, how you feel about them and how you've used them. And I think what you're doing with your sleigh rides is terrific because it gives the people that come in, the skiers, the flavor of life that has gone by and the life that was really here.
There was a time about, I believe it was about 1945, that the tractors began to come into the valley and be sold, and farmers were, of course, were anxious to get those machines to do work. But I remember well that my father had always had a real good team, and my brother Raymond drove the horses and did the work on the farm, and all of the work on the farm was done with the horses. And everyone at that time, just about every farmer had a nice driving horse and a sleigh, and it wasn't anything for the people to go to Waitsfield with their horse and sleigh. In fact, when I was in Waitsfield High School, I had a girlfriend there, and I went out one Sunday night with the horse and sleigh from our house, and it was about 25 miles that I did in that night to give my girlfriend a ride. And I grew up going to the Fuller farm, speaking of the Fullers again, and was always excited about their colts that they raised, and I loved to see colts. And I just made up my mind at a very young age that if I ever grew up, that I would have horses of my own. And when I first started farming in East Warren, where John Roth is now, I had two good teams of horses, and we sugared and we plowed with those horses and we hayed with them, and all the work was done. That was before I got a tractor at all. But gradually the horses went out. They got old, and people seemed to be pressured to do more work, and the tractors were faster, and so my horses were never replaced there. But I never realized how much I missed the horses until I began to get some more after I sold the farm in East Warren and came to Moortown to live. I had a little extra money, and I bought some Morgan mares, a couple of Morgan mares, and I raised Morgan colts. But they were a little bit too flighty for me, and not quite heavy enough to do the things that I needed to do, and so I went over to Belgians. And I have 10 horse kind in my barn now, and people tell me that I don't need only two. And maybe I don't, but I don't know where to start to get rid of them, because I have, over through the years, I've had so much love for horses and the things that they do. And I give sleigh rides to the skiers that come to the valley and with these horses, and sometimes I use four horses together, a lead team on front of my bigger horses. And I have raised colts and sold some colts for my horses that help out to pay the taxes, and it almost seems like old times, the things that I'm doing with my horses now.
How do the skiers react? What do they tell you, or what's their reaction when they come for a sleigh ride? Not necessarily like last week, but usually.
I think the skiers' reaction as they come to my farm for a sleigh ride is that, oh boy, here's something that we've read about in books all our lives, and we've never had a chance to do it. And some of them get real excited about the horses, and they want to know the history of this horse or that one, and they want me to tell them some stories about the older people that lived in Warren when I was young, and sometimes other stories that don't have anything to do with the people in Warren that I've told them about. And most of the people, when we have finished the ride, are happy to come in the barn with me when I put up the horses, and they look at the 10 different horses, and they want me to tell them about it. And it seems to me that they are getting a piece of history firsthand.
I think that's very true. When you think about, really, in many ways, you're using what you grew up with and are enabling them to have a taste of it. I think it's a pretty good deal for them. Now, do they? How do they regard you? Do they think of you as?
Well, I've heard people say throughout the valley here that the people who come in here and want to ski and love the valley and perhaps build homes here, that they some of them think that the older people of Warren are hicks. And that they don't know really much, but I'm not sure that that is so. There might be a few that feel that way, but I think the most of them are real anxious to find out what our type of life has been, and they want to try to live some of that goodness that we call goodness that we've had here in the valley. They want to share it. And I don't think too many of them think that the people here are dumb. But a few do, I guess.
Is there a big gulf in the valley between the people that have lived here all their lives and the people that come in, or do they mix pretty well, or how does that go?
I think the skiers and the people that have come to Warren, and some of them have built beautiful homes here. I think that they, on an average, I think that they want to mix with the people of the valley. I'm reminded of the shows that we put on. There's a Cabin Fever show being put on by the Valley Players, and most of those are outside people that come in, and they put these shows on all summer, once a month at least, and they have some real good talent. But in about March, they have what they call a Cabin Fever Folly show, and they get the local people out all they can at that time to be in those shows. And I think they, of course, our line of thinking and doing these things is a lot different than theirs, but I think that once a year they get a kick out of seeing how we try to entertain them.
When you grew up, the way I hear it was that there were just lots of very small little farms. And that's really changed. Did that change with the ski industry coming in, or when did that begin to change?
I think that people began to put farms together when the tractors came. When the tractors came, and some of the people that had been farming all their lives suddenly decided that they were too old to farm, and their children didn't always take on their farms. In fact, very few have in the valley. Very few of their offspring have taken on the duties of the family farm. But when the tractors came and they were able to do more work, and as people grew old and stopped farming, then the ambitious young people bought up some of those adjoining farms to theirs, and that is the way that that the larger farms came about.
What about when the ski industry came in? Were there any, what were the most noticeable changes?
The first change that I noticed when people came in here is, oh boy, these people have got plenty of money and they're going to buy our land, and they're going to pay us big prices for our land. And that did happen to some extent. But I know by the time that I left East Warren and came to Moortown, which was about 30 years ago, that I had sold very little land at that time. Of course, there was an awful lot of land in the valley, and everybody was anxious to sell. And I think it's just been the last, perhaps 10 years that land, the price of land has come up a lot, and people are, and some people don't want to see their land go to be developed. They want to keep it in the family farms, but that's a kind of an uphill story. It doesn't always work that way, because they can get so much more for their land that by selling it for development that they just can't afford to farm anymore.
Now, I think you told me once too about sort of the old attitudes and attitudes toward education and learning and so forth. Do you think that those, first of all, tell me a little bit about them, but do you think that there's been a change in those attitudes, or?
There has been quite a change in attitudes about education since I grew up. Of course, my brothers and sisters, the older ones, were helping out with the farm, and they were needed to work and to help cut logs and raise potatoes and sugar and whatnot. And I remember that back in those days that Waitsfield High School closed down for a month so that the boys could go home and sugar, because it was felt that they were needed at home. But then after a few years, this was not necessary, they didn't think, to do any more. So there's been quite a change in the attitude towards education. I was very well aware that my father didn't believe in education. He thought that if people were willing to work, that they could get a good living without an education. And I know that my own going through high school and then afterwards going to University of Vermont was frowned upon by my family, because they thought it was a foolish thing to do. But, I was determined to get somewhat of an education, and I'm glad that I did. I'm glad that I went to the university for a year and a half and really got out and see how other people did things and the way the world went a little bit more, and made me a little more appreciative, perhaps, of the valley when I did come back.
What are you, there's this woman that has, what do they call it? A fire? Anyway, this water that bubbles up out of her ground. And have you heard about that? This woman gets 1,000 gallons a minute. Aquifer. Yes.
Aquifer.
Do you know anything about that? No. Because Ed feels that this is a possible thing for the town.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're doing pretty well. Is there anything particularly that you feel that we haven't touched on that we should touch on? Which, tell me.
Well, when he was telling about the 50 cents, the song.
Yeah.
He sang it to one group of sleigh riders, and the fellows got down at one of them and said, "My friend, I tell you, I only got 50 cents.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember you telling me that. You want to tell it for the...
I found that the ski people, or the people that come for sleigh rides, have quite a sense of humor, some of them. I told them about, I sang that song about the boy that only had 50 cents, and so when they finished one night with my sleigh ride, the man says, I can't pay you all that you asked us, he says, because I only have 50 cents.
Do you ever hear from these skiers again after you take them out?
Yes, we've heard from a lot of skiers after we've taken them out. The Black family comes to mind right away. They came several different winters, and they have sent us a copy of a book that he wrote and some of the things that they were doing. And some of the other people have sent me books of poems. I wanted to, I remember of telling them about the blacksmiths in the old days and what transpired with the blacksmith, between the blacksmith and the farmers. And I know that my father went to Waitsfield with our team of horses, which was 8 miles, and when I was a youngster, I used to go with him, and I would see John Kingsbury work on those shoes and fit those shoes to the horse's feet, and some of the times he would be making sleds, perhaps, or fixing a wagon wheel and building it all over and putting a new felly on. They called the piece that went around the outside the felly, and that might have gotten rotten for somebody, and they are broken somehow, and the Kingsburys were very good at bending iron and using their forges. And I asked this, told this people, the sleigh riders that I had, about the blacksmiths and what wonderful jobs they did for the farmers. And I know that John Kingsbury made me a bobsled back when I first started farming for $35. And later he built me a 3-beam sap sled for $50. And of course, that today that wouldn't even buy the wood. But those men would work in their shops and do that sort of thing, and I was very interested to see how they did it, although I never wanted to take that up. And I remember telling these people that on my sleigh ride that I wished I could remember all of that song, that poem about the village blacksmith, and lo and behold, in a few days, I got this nice book of Longfellow's poems, and that was in it. And they told us what a wonderful time they had with us, and that they appreciated it, and they hoped I would be able to use the book.
That's nice.
And I kind of like to repeat that story about the blacksmiths. Under a spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands. The smith, a mighty man is he, with large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are strong as iron bands. His hair is crisp and long and black, his face is like the tan. His brow is wet with honest sweat, he earns whate'er he can, and looks the whole world in the face, for he owes not any man. He goes on Sunday to the church and sits among his boys. He hears the parson pray and preach, and hears his daughter's voice singing in the village choir, and it makes his heart rejoice. It sounds to him like her mother's voice singing in paradise. He needs must think of her once more, as in the grave she lies, and with a strong, rough hand he wipes the tears out of his eyes. And the children coming home from school look in at the open door. They love to watch the flaming, they love to see the flaming forge and hear the bellows roar and catch the flaming sparks that fly like chaff from a threshing floor. Toiling, rejoicing, sorrowing, onward through life he goes. Each morning sees some task begin, each evening sees it close. Something attempted, something done, has earned a night's repose. Thanks, thanks to thee, my worthy friend, for the lessons thou hast taught. Thus on the flaming forge of life our fortunes must be wrought. Thus on the sounding anvil shaped each burning deed and thought.
You have another one too, as I remember, that you told about Christmas. You still do that? No. How about, did you ever roll the roads? Do you ever drive one of those big teams?
No, no. I saw them work, but I didn't drive the teams. My brother drove four horses on a roller.
That's where you learned, though.
I got some of my education on driving horses from a man named Leon Brown in Warren, and he was a road commissioner. And I was 16 years old at the time, and I guess I had been a sophomore in high school, and he came to the farm, Leon Brown came to my father, and wanted to know if he could get his horses to work on the road machine with his team, because it took four horses to use that big machine and cut the ditches open and whatnot. And my father says, no, I can't send the team because my son Raymond has a paralysis in his legs now and he's not able to work. And so he says, there's no way that, and he says, I don't drive four horses. And Leon says, well, what about this young fellow right here? My father says he never had any experience of driving horses like that. And Leon says, if you let your team come to work for me, I will show this young man how to drive four horses. And so I went to work on Monday morning with Leon Thayer, and it was a pretty hard job. We were opening ditches and cutting the sods out of the ditches. And, of course, the horses didn't like to be down in that wet ditch. They kept wanting to go back up on the road, and I had to hold them down there. And I got pretty nervous and excited sometimes, and Leon would say, whoa, and stop the horses. And then he would tell me a story or something, and we'd rest there a few minutes. And finally, after I cooled down a little, he would say, well, do you feel like starting along? And I'd say yes, and we'd go along. So that was my early training on driving four horses. And since then, I have taken my own horses to Essex Fair and different places and driven four horses. And it's quite exciting to see four big Belgians out there ahead of you just taking off and you having command over the whole thing with the little lines in your hands. And it's I like it very much.
You've got just terrific horses, too. One of the things that might be good to bring up is that Floyd floats horses' teeth. And that you've had him here. Didn't he file your horse's teeth? Yeah. It might, I don't know whether it would work as an introduction to Floyd or not, but if you could maybe comment on, you know, there are still a number of these old timers around, and, you know, here is somebody you still deal with on a professional.
Had his teeth cut several times in order to...
When I was growing up in East Warren, as I said before, the Fullers lived just over the hill. And when I was telling the stories about the Fuller family, I forgot about Floyd Fuller. He was the youngest of the four boys. And he learned how to float horses' teeth from his father. In other words, when I say float, he has a little bar that has rough teeth on it, very fine teeth, that he goes up the side of the horse's jaw with when the teeth get rough. And I had one old horse here that Floyd came, and he cut off his front teeth. And he said that the vets had told him that this wasn't taught in colleges at all, that those front teeth from on the horses were supposed to wear down by themselves. But they didn't always do that. They were quite tough in some horses. And as those teeth, as the back teeth wore down and the front ones grew, It was hard for the back, for the grinders to come together, and so Floyd would cut those front teeth down. And he has been, and now Floyd is 90-some years old, and he has been doing horses' teeth, and not just in this valley, but all of this part of the state. People have heard about him and that he does a wonderful job, and he knows how to fix the horses' teeth so they can eat again. Some of these horses have gotten real thin because they couldn't chew their hay, and as Floyd tells it, some of the vets have been there to see those horses and couldn't seem to fix them so they could eat, and they would call Floyd and he could fix them all right. There was no trouble about it. The horse would start right in eating. And I think that is one of the things that about the older people, that you see, he learned how to do that from his father, and they studied the horse's mouth, and he has an old mouth of a horse showing the teeth, and he does work out in places of teaching young people how the horse's teeth work and what needs to be done by showing them by example, in other words.
Good. You had it? I bet you have. I think the other thing that they're going to need is silence. Unless, do you have any questions?
Okay, so I'll just get this out of your face a little bit. And we just need to sit real quietly just for another like half a minute or something like that.
This is used in editing.
This is Bob Go for Room Tone. Okay, this is Bob Go Room Tone without the clock. Okay, that's the end of the room tone.